Hi, and welcome to episode 55 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to swing through the trees of independent comics this week are writer, artist, creator of the kick-ass superhero webcomic Vanguard, and tonight's birthday boy,
hey,
it's Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Happy birthday.
Cheers. Yes.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. And speaking of age, it's the man that time forgot.
Yeah, the youngest member of the team.
It's Tony Esmond.
You right?
Yeah. How are you, right, Tony?
Yeah. I'm all right, so yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, I've had a good week. It's all
is
right.
It oil of ole that keeps you looking so young?
What's that?
Is it oil of ole?
No, I am young. You know I'm much younger than you are.
Yeah.
That's true. By
29.
29?
Yeah.
I said you mentioned... Just before we came on the air, Tony, that you got a message from Sarah Harris saying, like, you wanted a ranty show.
More ranty.
We spent the last half an hour fucking this ranting.
We've been C-bombing non-stop. Yeah. I don't think I've said anything other than the C-bomb.
It's hard to make out what you're saying because the C-words.
Yeah.
It's like the vagina monologues. There were so many C-bombs.
Tell me you've been to see that play, because that's the funniest thing I can think of.
Oh, no, I've never seen that.
Ah. Oh. I'd go with you to see that, just to watch your face. That would be me.
Right.
I'll turn around and look at you in horror.
I think that's going to be a Kickstarter campaign, I think. So we can get tickets for these two to see the vagina monologues.
We'll dress up and everything. We'll take you as our dates.
That reminds me of that line from the IT Crowd when, if you've seen that episode, when they take someone to see the vagina monologues. And someone comes out irate and just sort of says, next time you take me to a show about talking fannies, there better be bloody talking fannies. Oh, dear. Anyway.
I think I might have seen that movie once.
As you can tell, folks, we've got a guest on this week. He's already wished Dan a happy birthday because he's a nice chap.
Yes.
Nice. Thanks.
Yeah, so it's time to... Be quiet, you. Get back in your box.
So, be nice to him at the start. I know how your mind works.
Oh, please. Works? Please. That's a bit of a stretch. Anyway, I need to ask everyone out there, who doesn't love a monkey?
This is another one with one of those ones where you've written it down, isn't it? Here we go.
It looks right. Good on paper.
Yeah. Oh, he's already my favourite guest.
Oh, dear. Anyway, we love monkeys on this show. Right,
we do.
And our guest this week is an artist. I am really struggling to read from this script this week, you bastards. Our guest this week is an artist who is no stranger to the world of primates either. Neither am I, judging by my co-hosts. Many may know him from his work on the series Apes and Capes and the new spy series Bubbles 07. He's also one of the people behind the comic-making collective Bounce Comics. And he is Matt Rook. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hey, Matt. You're right.
Thank you.
Matt.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Saying that the Bubbles 07, it took me quite a while to get the pun in the title.
I want to go to the theatre with you.
So I thought that's really obvious. Why didn't I get that in the first fucking read?
I watched it this weekend, actually. I watched it yesterday.
What did you watch?
Spectre.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, I quite liked it. I thought everyone went, oh, no, it's not very good. And I thought it was quite good because I like the way they show what a sort of dinosaur he is through it.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out on top in the end, obviously.
The thing I've learned about you, Tony, is you play to your own rules, don't you? You know,
I do.
When everyone else doesn't like a film or a book,
I'm living on the edge.
You're always one that's like, I like that. I really like that.
Yeah. You saw I put about Doctor Who, didn't you, earlier or yesterday, or it was.
I think that was a bit
you
harsh.
Liked that, didn't you? Yeah.
I was saying it was on yesterday, one of the better Bond films, and people will laugh at this, is Spy Who Loved Me.
Yes, of course. Anything by Rushmore is brilliant.
Yeah.
No, I like that one as well.
Yeah. It's got disco music, Caroline Munro. It's got crazy opening sequence. It's just got everything.
Yeah. As much as I love Caroline Munro.
It's got the Lotus.
As much as I love Caroline Munro, I don't think I'd lend her my helicopter. I wouldn't really trust her to fly it, to be fair.
You have a helicopter?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is it like Magnum's helicopter?
Yeah, I love Magnum.
So do I.
That's right,
Amazing series.
That's why I've got this moustache.
And you go around in those short shorts all the time.
Yep. Identity theft, my friend. Always keep them guessing.
Presumably we'll look forward to Magnum remake with Melissa McCarthy or something. And get outraged.
Oh,
whip up the fanboys again.
Yeah, cue the outrage already.
Oh, people are so easily had over, aren't they?
I know.
I saw there was I mean, I don't care. I might go and see it at the cinema. I don't mind. You know, yeah. I like funny films. But there was this, they've done it where, is it Kirsten Wiig? Is that her name? Kristen Wiig. She's like standing outside one of the premieres, and next to her are two young girls made up as like Ghostbusters. And they were saying, look, see, this makes young girls happy. I said, firstly, that's the premiere. The girls haven't seen the film. Yeah. So how do they know? And that's clearly set up by the publicity. There's no two ways about it. That's a publicity stunt. People are so stupid, aren't they?
Yeah, but that's such a pessimistic worldview. Why can't you just let people be happy, Tony?
They can't have seen it. So how do they know?
You know, I watched that Evolution. You know, in that Dan Aykroyd plays like a total mental person, like clinically, like issues. And then I watched a behind the scenes documentary for Ghostbusters, and it's like, oh, okay, that wasn't an act. That's fucking Dan Aykroyd. he's fucking mental. Like, he believes in ghosts and everything.
Okay. Did you watch that documentary I sent through to you? The advert for it.
Yeah.
About, National Lampoon.
That was ace.
Oh, that is such a good movie, man. It's really well made. If there's ever a good movie about something. Funny, they had their problems, mostly involving cocaine. But
Was it like Chevy Chase, a massive racist?
It's just like a massive cock end.
Yeah. Okay.
To anyone out there, there is actually still a podcast going on. These two are just having a conversation by themselves.
I've got to tell you this one story. He goes, he's away with the bloke. I can't remember the name of the guy. A very talented writer who sort of originated all the sort of big ideas in National Lampoon. He's away with him, and he's in one room, and his mate, this bloke from National Lampoon, is the other. And he's been told, take him away, get him off the gear. He's like going mental. So Chevy Chase runs to his balcony because he knows he can hear him, and then pretends to make a noise like he's thrown himself off. And he's telling this story to the camera, and then the bloke ran in and thought he'd died for about 5 minutes. You know, he was looking over the edge for him and stuff. And then they say, oh yeah, by the way, he threw himself off a cliff.
Fuck, there's a bit of a stinger in that one.
I know, yeah. It was a funny story, wasn't it?
That's weird, because someone said, look, you're away on holiday for a week with Chevy Chase. Yeah. You've got to get him off the gear. I said, thanks.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's some fucking holiday.
Yeah, go and do that stupid video with Paul Simon. That'd cheer you up.
It cheered me up. They both play, is it flutes at the same time? It's lovely. And they do a dance.
They do a little dance, don't they? We could do that dance, couldn't we? That'd be good.
We could. I want to see you and Dan do that dance during the vagina monologues.
We'll just stage rush and say the seatbelt lock. Run off.
Oh, dear. We need to start on that Kickstarter video as soon as we can. now, Matt is actually with us for the whole show. He is going to be with us for the whole show.
Sadly. Yes.
You what? You cheeky bastard.
He's my favourite guest.
And we were going to be talking about his work and the brilliant Bubbles 07, but I think I might change that.
Bring Scribbins up.
But before we get all to that, comics. What have we been reading this week? Tony, anything by Chevy Chase?
No, I wish he made a comic, wouldn't he? Didn't he? Oh, no. Let's stop on our Chevy Chase cocaine stories, as fun as they were. Yep. I've read a book called Demon, which is Daemon. You know, like they spelled the demons, the Doctor Who episode, when it was good, before they started going on Instagram and saying lol a lot.
Oh, it's so negative. Lol.
Lols.
Lamau. Ruffle. Anyway.
Obs. Yeah. Anyway. I'll hook you up on Instagram later. It's by Mike Hassenbach, Maik, and then Hassenbank, and he's from, I think he's from Berlin, somewhere like that. Yeah, Berlin. It's black and white. It's almost magazine size. You imagine a magazine, but sort of slightly thinner. It's 32 pages of black and white interior art, and it starts with a sort of band playing in a sort of busy, sort of grungy, sweaty nightclub, and they're called the Black Forest. Which I suppose it doesn't have the analogy of being a cake, does it, in Germany? I don't know. Do they have a cake named after a forest in their own country? I don't know how that works. Yeah. But, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Although I'm just going to be thinking about
Wouldn't
cake.
It just be called a cake?
Yeah, I like cake. Actually, they're a good band.
This is just a gatto. There you go.
And it's the lead singer is this sort of, it's hard to tell actually, I'm going to say hipster, but he looks a bit like he could be sort of a redneck trucker kind of guy with his shirt off and a bit of a paunch, and he's sort of jumping about, and he's being watched by, I think Mate does play with the reader a bit, because he lines up a few different people and they are all hipsters, you know, beards, baseball caps, you know, earrings, watching this band play, all the sort of people who wear hats indoors, you know, the sort of people, I mean, don't you? Yeah. So this guy is watching the band and he needs a wee, so he goes in the toilet and he goes to the urinal and he does a wee, and on the way out he sort of knocks into a guy who beats him up and does a wee wee on his head and puts his face in the urinal, and that's a quite a long sequence that goes home, that's goes on for quite a long time, and he gets beaten up and he gets covered in urine, and it's sort of that, it's quite sort of dirty artwork, and he plays on that for a while, and then he decides to walk home on his own, so he ignores his friends because obviously he smells a wee wee.
Sorry, every time I say wee wee gets me every time.
And he walks through town, and there's a lovely sort of double page spread of the sort of grungy, horribly sort of town that he walks through. So he goes back, and it's about then that the sort of comic begins. You begin to think, well, this is not normal, this comic, it's all a bit strange, because the cockroaches who live in his flat, they're all talking to each other, and they're saying, look, he's home late, he's, you know, maybe needs cheering up. So he goes to sleep, and then they start singing to him, and a combination of the cockroaches crawling over his face and the fact that he's covered in wee wee, although he's washed most of it off, he has this sort of really bad dream, like a sort of paranoia dream, where, you know, faces of the audience are chasing him, and he's sort of running down some stairs, and he can't quite get away, and then a big sort of, and then it really goes mental, because a sort of, I'm going to describe it as a putrid vagina opens up on the side of his head.
Oh, is that your word of, is that your word of the week? Seriously, Tony, is that your...
I'm going to take a picture of this and send it to you, because there's no other description of it. It's a sort of rotting, it's the shape of a vagina, and it opens up on the side of his head, and out of this hole comes two sort of hands, and you see sort of a partial face of this sort of fanged creature that crawls out of his head, and has got sort of all sort of sores and pus hanging off it and all this sort of thing. And I won't spoil it from then on, because it just goes completely off on one. And it flips from being what I initially thought when I picked it up. I thought, oh, it's a bit of a sort of slice of life book about a hipster band or something, you know, the usual sort of thing. And it sort of just goes off on one and becomes this sort of horror story of revenge. So this creature, as you can imagine, flips out of his head and heads on a sort of revenge to get back for the guy who beat him up, who did the wee-wee on him earlier in the thing.
So that is the total revenge, just for someone basically taking a leak on him.
Well, I wouldn't be happy, would you?
Well,
I don't know.
No, I wouldn't be happy. But I'm guessing...
It's not as if he just accidentally wheezes on his foot or something, you know.
Yeah, otherwise that'd be overkill, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be a bit much, wouldn't it? Killing someone who's held you down a weed on you, but not if they've just done it on your shoe.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're saying to the general public right now. It's okay. Go on, Danny.
Okay, it becomes like extremely sort of vicious and crazy, and it goes from being like this like slice of life to being a sort of urban, vicious, body morphic, violent revenge horror book, really. I absolutely loved it, because my preconception was completely ruined and completely flipped over, and at the end of it I was getting a bit bored at the start, thinking, oh fuck me, it's another slice of life, you know, Love and Rockets, let's go see a band, you know, type thing. Mm-hmm. And it ends up being the first book of a series where the last page is something happens and the main character is smiling, and you think, oh, this is not, something else is going to happen here. You know, it's the artwork's scratchy, black and white, but very clear to read. All the figures, you know who everyone is, even when he's sort of tripping out and having this weird dream, you know that that's him, just from the sort of slightly simpler style of drawing. It goes, it's very like, I would say, do you remember Bridget Deacon, who we spoke about a few months ago when Dave White was on?
Yeah.
That sort of style thing, maybe a bit like Charles Burns, Black Hole.
Right, okay. Sort of craziness, sort of heavy blacks and things like that. Is that
yeah, an awful lot of heavy blacks. It's doubly disgusting as well as disturbing, and it doesn't really adhere to any sort of, you know, like teenagers running through the woods horror cliches of any kind. Excellent for a couple of really really good full plate splashes. One of which is the aforementioned vagina. And that the thing where it comes out of his head is just so well done. You think, oh my god, what's happening here? Mm. And I'd say I love revenge horror, especially sort of 70s, 80s, you know, that sort of funky revenge horror films that you get, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And it's really good. It's really dirty. It's a, I'm going to say it's a dirty little treasure that I found in this on the
rack. Sorry.
yeah. As opposed to a little nugget that came out earlier. But the I found it in Orbital. I've no idea where it came from. It would appear to be German, but in English, written in English. I had trouble sort of pinning down who exactly had written it because there's pretty much no credits in it. And I eventually found out that it's this Maik Hassenbach. And if you go to Maik, M-A-I-K, and then Hassen, H-A-S-E-N-B-A-N-K, MaikHassenbach.com. That's his website. It's made by a small publishing company, which I presume is just him, really, called Radical Jet Set. So you stick that into Twitter, you'll find them. And his Twitter is Maha81, M-A-H-A, and then the numbers 81. Very, very good. Quite disturbing. Can't wait to see issue two, actually. It's a fiver. I'm going to say a tiny bit expensive, but turned out to be quite a good read, so I'll forgive him for that. There you go. That's my nice one.
Nice. Yeah. Dan?
Cool. I was given a book, Out of the Mountains of Madness.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're all familiar with Lovecraft stuff.
Oh yeah.
By
yeah.
What's the name of the chap? It's I.N.J. Colbard, yeah. The illustrator and writer.
Yeah.
He's got a real. I can't remember where I've seen this guy's stuff before, but it's kind of got a real kind of a classic, clean line, like kind of Tintin-esque kind of stuff. It's
yeah.
He's done a lot of books like the Sherlock Holmes. He's developed a bunch of them. Is it Self-Made Hero did this, didn't it? I believe
yes,
the publishers.
You're right.
He's done a lot of Lovecraft stuff and definitely that old school, exactly how you say it, Dan, Tintin like sort of.
Yeah, it really works for it. I mean, I'm not sure who if there's anyone out there who's not kind of familiar with Lovecraft stuff, but I'll read the blurb on the back. It's September 1930, a scientific expedition embarks for the frozen wasteland of Antarctica. But the secrets they unearth there reveal a past almost beyond human comprehension and a future too terrible to imagine. It's a really good story. I would say it's not one of my favourite Lovecraft stories. That would probably be Shadow over Innsmouth.
Yeah,
but right. It captures all the great moments of the tale. It's kind of it's a really good comic.
It's a difficult story to adapt, I think. That's why.
I can remember reading it first time and near the end they go to this kind of like monstrous alien city. And I thought, would I like to draw that? And the answer would be no. Because he kind of basically talks about buildings and constructions that have no kind of real geometrical kind of shape or we can't really understand them. And it's like, how the fucking hell do you draw that? Yeah. So,
and there are creatures that, like, as soon as you see them, you're driven mad. Do you know what I mean? How do you do that?
How do you illustrate that?
Yeah.
I kind of, personally, I think kind of Lovecraft stuff works better as a book as opposed to a comic book.
Okay.
But this made me reassess that. It's really well done. Mm. I mean, all the period stuff is absolutely spot on. And
didn't Alan Moore mine this quite heavily for one of his Nemo books, one of the later Gentleman books?
Yes.
I think he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he tried to tie that Neonomicon stuff in, didn't he? I can't say I'm too familiar with that. There was a lady at work who borrowed it from the library and said, check out that book before you kind of go reading it on the fucking tube. And she returned it and discussed and complained about it.
Really?
Yeah. So she wasn't a big fan of that.
Too many willies.
Yeah.
I think it was all the forced sex and rape, which kind of...
Oh, yeah, that is not...
It's a bit of a crazy book, that one.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yes. 2 weeks now I mentioned Alan Moore for the show, so
yeah,
doing well. But yeah, it's a great book. I'd love to see if he'd kind of do other ones.
He's done
about three or four other ones, I think.
Yeah. Oh, nice one.
Yeah. He's doing Brass Sun, is he? Is that the one he's doing in 2008? Yes.
Yeah. And World's End as well. World's End, is it? With
yes,
Dan
you're right.
Abnett?
Yeah.
And also the new, is it the new Dead Wardians, I believe?
Yes.
Okay. Is it World's End? Matt,
Wild's End. I've got it in front of me, actually. Okay. I haven't read it yet, but I bought it the other day. Yeah, Wild's End. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Another with all the rabbits and stuff.
Yes.
I think he's definitely one of my favourite artists, certainly like in the UK at the moment. You know, all the work he does. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Lovecraft. I know there's a lot of people that do like versions of it, but like Dan said, it's very rare. You know, people do too much, I think they try too hard with Lovecraft. Yeah. And I think Colbard does a brilliant sort of balancing act of, you know, less is more, certainly with his style, which and it adds to the sort of period nature of it, you know, rather than trying to force it into the modern world and, you know, making it super detailed. I think his style is actually perfect for the Lovecraft universe.
Yeah.
I'd have to agree with that, actually. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Ian's, actually. His work is one of my favourite artists at the moment, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's a shame the film never kind of got off the ground with Del Toro, because he was trying to
get that to the screen. That
would have been fantastic.
Although I think if you want to see, I think the closest we're going to get to seeing this story on the big screen is Prometheus. That is essentially, even though it's sort of caked in the alien universe in a very loose term, can we say? But the way that story is and the basis of it about like this alien race who are essentially the reason for humanity, do you know what I mean? It was like an experiment, that sort of thing. All the things that happen in Prometheus, it's clearly someone who's loved at the Mountains of Madness and wanted to write it.
I've never considered that, but now looking at it, there is parallels.
I've never seen Prometheus. Is it good or not?
No, it's rubbish.
Rubbish.
I like it, but it's not an alien film.
Nah.
No. Yeah, that's what I need to watch it and not think it's an alien film.
They shoot an alien in there after reasons.
Yeah. Do they? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, Anyway, this book's good. Anyway,
it's going to be the show of sidetracking.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Sidetrack Podcast.
I've said vaginas and Vince said willies.
That was a lot before we came on air.
So that's us done. Who knows what Dan and Matt are going to say by the end of the show.
Yeah, it needs to be representative of all people.
I'm guessing you can get this on Amazon, etc., can't you, Dan? I think you can find it in
good bookshops. You can, yeah. I think it's one of those kind of, you can get it in general bookshops and comic shops, etc.
Self-Made Hero do a lot of cons as well. I've seen them at quite a few. So
yeah, he does quite a lot of cons, doesn't he?
He does. He's been to Thought Bubble a few times.
Oh, okay.
I've never met him, but I would love to.
Yeah.
He's a huge
man. Woman giving that. I bet he'd like to meet you too.
Who wouldn't? That'll be a poll for next week. Oh dear, I'm so sorry, Matt. Normally this goes a lot smoother than no, it doesn't.
I don't believe that for a second. Do I?
So you would recommend this to everyone then, Dan? Even people that haven't read Lovecraft.
Yeah, my only thing with the Mountains of Madness, it essentially lays a lot of Lovecraft stories bare. So, like, I would wait to read Mountains of Madness near the end of reading other stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it kind of, like, plots out everything that happens. Not everything, but it kind of gives you a really good overview of everything. So when you read the earlier books, the kind of some of the mystery, I feel, has been taken away a little.
Right, I'm going to put this out here, but I hope nobody hates me for it, but are we over Lovecraft now? Are we over the peak of Lovecraft love? Because for a while, everyone just talked about him.
Yeah.
And then everyone now is going, that's a bit yesterday. I'm too cool to be into that now because everyone's into it.
You're into that phase.
I've never worried about being cool and I still love it.
I was very late to Lovecraft, so I only got in the last couple of years, started reading about it.
Yeah.
It's the same with zombies now. If someone came out to me and said, I've got the best zombie comic ever, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, it's like anal, isn't it? Anal's the same.
Yeah.
Were you talking about the TV series Angel? I hope you were. Have you ever tried Angel? No. I didn't like Buffy.
Tried it once, didn't like it.
Yeah.
And then you tried Receiving. Anyway, Vince, what have you been reading?
Yeah, Vince, thanks. Tell us.
My pick this week is a comic that was sent in by one of our listeners, a man called Todd Oliver.
I like this.
He sent us his first ever stab at like a full comic called Boxes, which is a 24-page full colour comic, which is a collection of sort of odd, surreal, sort of sort of funny strips. Some of them are autobiographical, some of character driven. Have either of you guys read this yet?
I haven't, I'm afraid. Not yet.
It's your birthday, Dan. You can do whatever you want. Tony, have you read this yet? Is Tony actually there, or is he?
I had the mute button on because I was typing something rude to you. I've read it. Yeah.
Yes.
I really liked it. I like. I think Cake Face we talked about before. Is it in Dirty Rotten Comics 5? I've got a feeling it is.
Is it really?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a collection of strips, some of which I think have been used elsewhere. But no, I very much liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a real pleasant surprise. This was. I loved it. Cake Face, which is. A brilliant sort of strip that starts it off, which is really quite surreal and quite dark. It's a story of someone slicing off their face and sending it as sort of fan mail to a cake factory. So that if you understand that, then you see the sort of thing that we're getting at here. There's lots of different strips. There's one called Self-Reflection, which is a kind of an autobiographical sort of 9-panel strip, which literally examines the different stages in which someone sort of looks at themselves or sees themselves. There's one called The Accidental Cannibal.
That was my favourite.
That made me laugh out loud. I don't want to spoil that for anyone that might check this out.
But what made me laugh most about that is he seems to have a stomach in his head. Because his head gets bigger when he eats. Well, you're a cannibal, you're going to eat someone, aren't you? Yeah. When he eats someone, it just made me laugh. Why has his head got bigger? Oh, yeah, because that's where the body's gone.
Yeah. You just got to throw all concepts of the world sort of out of your. Just out the window and just enjoy this.
And it's put me right off Gingerbread Men. I'll tell you that now.
it's dark and sick and twisted, but in a really beautiful way, I think.
There's
a strip called Nice Guy Charlie, where you meet the nicest sort of bloke in the world. Like, literally, he just makes everyone feel nicer apart from you, Tony. but then you get a real twisted look behind who he really is. When he's not Nice Guy Charlie, and it's so odd and amazing, and the results of that are just that everything made me laugh out loud. It's quite dark humour, and when we're talking about people being eaten and someone slicing their own face off, but I think Todd's style really worked brilliantly for it.
Great cover as well. Love the cover.
Which is a self-portrait kind of piece with lots of different bits of like the internal book. There's all these little characters sort of dotted about him, which I think is brilliant. Another one that I quite liked was Edward A. Cox, who's a working family man who's having a day where he's suffering from a headache, and he happens to have a Cox's apple for a head.
That's it. And his wife keeps forgetting.
Yes.
And then one of the kids clearly doesn't have an apple for a head.
Yeah.
And what's happening?
Yeah. There's lots of stuff going on like that. It's stuffed cover to cover with sort of dark comedy gems. I mean, I found it's like a sketch show, very reminiscent of stuff like Big Train.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you like that kind of stuff that's, not afraid to sort of like just do things for the sake of doing things, if you go along for the ride, it's just amazing.
I'm going to say the animation from Monty Python as well. There's a little bit of that in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant bit. There's the 10 steps of the creative process. Now, I've seen lots of things like when people describe the creative process, procrastination, etc., and they always they always strike a chord. They're always quite funny, I find. But this one, his art just adds an extra layer of hilarity that you can relate to. And the last panel on that, when you see the final piece of work, is just it's just amazing. Do you remember that one, Tony?
All mental. He's got issues. I'm going to say he's got issues, but I think he lays them out on a page, doesn't he? And he says, look, I don't know what, I grow a bit of beard, because my face is so pale, or something like that. He's got this sort of, he's quite critical of himself as well, which I kind of liked.
And there's literally one page where it's, hey, let's take a bit of time to get to know the illustrator of this fine comic. And it's a self-portrait that's sort of highlighting why he's got permanent dark patches under his eyes, no matter what he does to try and get rid of them. What's in his pockets should anyone want to mug him? And you see the evolution of the shoes, his footwear evolution from 1992 to now, which is brilliant, where it goes from Nike Airs to the modern shoe, which is a Primark trainer. He even says they're £13. it's like all like the best sort of humour. It's very self-deprecating, and it knows exactly what it is and does it very well. And Todd, like we said before, Todd Starr really gives the book a real life of its own. If you like the humour of like John Cullum,
yes,
I mean, we're big fans of John on this
and
show.
Matt Dooley as well, who we talked about recently.
Yeah,
who did that book, Meanderings? Yeah,
yes.
It's got a little bit of an off-life feel. You know that free comic? I don't know if you've seen it, Matt. You get in London some comic shops, off-life, and it's sort of slightly sort of quirky, trippy, trippy stories.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, I think, as well. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So it's well worth checking out. You can find it more at boxescomic.com. He's just this is the first time he first one he's got printed himself, I think, and he's got a print run of 100 copies. At the moment, which are £4 each. He's got a Big Cartel, todoliver.bigcartel.com. I know Travelling Man in Leeds has some issues, so if that's your local, then pop in there and pick this up, because it's well worth it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what issue two is like. And also, he's sent such a nice email about the show.
He listens.
He did say he's slightly scared of the convention circuit now after hearing us talk about it.
I remember this email now.
Manly hug.
Yes. When I see you, Todd, I will embrace you like you've never been embraced before. And then Tony will hold you down and wee on you, which will start a revenge story.
Wee, indeed.
Boxes by Todd Oliver. You can, if you want, to find out more as well at Todd Oliver on Twitter. Well worth checking out. So there you go.
Yeah, he's good. Hey, yeah, nice guy.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Todd. Matt.
Hello.
What book would you
still
like
here?
To talk about? Oh, good man. what book would you like to talk about?
Okay, cool. I don't, strangely enough, I'm not that big on reading comics. I don't get a chance to go out much and pick up new stuff, but I have been getting into digital comics a bit more at the moment. And I picked up some stuff on Comixology this week.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not a big two reader. I do tend to go for
the independent submit titles.
Yes,
that kind of
thing. The creator own stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit fussy, so you know, I don't pick up everything. But
a comic book reader who's fussy? I've never heard of such a thing.
We're gonna have a rant about that.
So Image Comics, something I've been meaning to pick up for a while, actually, and just got around to get it, was Tokyo Ghost, the first trade of that, which I have to say I really, really, really liked.
Is that Sean Murphy?
It is, yeah, the fantastic Sean Murphy, yeah.
I have to say, I read this, weirdly, I read the first issue the other day, because I was going through my read poll, and Australian Vanda bought me the first issue when we were in New York. And I read it the other day, and I thought, my God, why did I leave it so long to read this? Because it's absolutely beautiful, isn't it?
It is fantastic. It really is. And I'll tell you what, the thing that struck me was, especially the first episode, it reminded me so much of when I first started reading comics, when I first started reading 2000 AD, back in the late 80s. It was I just suddenly thought, hang on, this is like... You know, this is the subversive Judge Dredd type stuff again. Just really, really good. Ultra violent and crazy and almost too difficult to read at some at times. You know, but yeah.
What is the story of that? Because I'm like Tony. I haven't had a chance to check this out. It's been one of those ones that's on the to read list, as it were.
Yes. Yeah.
To get the collection. Is it an easy one to pick up? Story wise, I mean.
Yeah, story-wise, it's quite simple, but it's that grungy sci-fi thing, and the language is interesting in places, so a bit like Dread, in that kind of words are a bit different, in slangy and that sort of thing. But I mean, I can read the blurb at the back if you like.
You go on in.
Yeah, go for it.
Where is it? There you go. The Isles of Los Angeles, 2089. Humanity is addicted to technology. A population of unemployed leisure seekers blissfully distracted from toxic contamination who borrow, steal, and kill to buy their next digital fix. Getting a virtual buzz is the only thing left to live for. It's the biggest industry, the only industry, the drug everyone needs, and gangsters run it all. Who do these gangsters turn to when they need their rule enforced? Constables Led Dent and Debbie Decay. This duo is about to be given a job that will force them out of the familiar squalor of Los Angeles to take down the last techless country on Earth, the Garden Nation of Tokyo. So it's quite a big blurb, but...
there's a lot to take in from that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it sort of like a techno-punk sort of cyberpunk?
Actually, yeah, I was going to say William Gibson.
That's another thing I did pick up on, very William Gibson. I don't know if you've ever tried to read Neuromancer or anything like that, but...
Yeah, I have,
Headfuck, basically. It's not far off, that sort of thing.
Is it the art that gets you first, but the story lives up to it? Because sometimes good art can lose you with a bad story, no matter how good the art is. Does anyone else have this?
Yeah.
It's a very busy page, this. I remember looking at it and thinking, there's an awful lot on a page around it, isn't there? You know,
there's a huge amount in there. And you can boggle at his artwork. It's crazy.
Is it crazier than like Punk Rock Jesus? Because that's quite... That's for life.
Yeah, I know. I've not read that. I don't know.
Oh, that's a good
But book. certainly the first issue is crazy, and it gets a little less crazy after that. But I think reading... Yeah, I didn't have a problem getting into it, actually. Like I say, very much 2000 AD stuff, really, in that... I mean, was it Rick Remender writing it?
Yeah.
Who I'm not massively familiar with, but I quite liked Black Science.
Such a good series, Black Science.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it, when you sort of like, say, superheroes, you instantly jump Marvel, DC, etc., but when you sort of like sci-fi and kind of virtually every other topic, you're kind of jumping towards 2000 AD as a sort of shorthand to the kind of story you're going to get. It says a lot for 2000 AD.
Yeah. Visually, also, it's like going back to see Simon Bisley's artwork in a sense, but slightly cleaner.
Right.
It's got that sort of vibe to it. And the colours also, Matt Hollingsworth, is it? Yeah. Fantastic colours on it.
He does some great work, doesn't he? Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Oh, I would say that's quite unrepresentative, the kind of cyberpunk and all that kind of stuff. I don't see too many comics like that nowadays.
Yeah,
not non-manga, I'd say. Yeah, certainly not.
Yeah, definitely non-manga.
I think it falls into so many cliches. Sorry, Vince. I think it falls into a lot of cliches, doesn't it, really, the cyberpunk thing? I think people almost have stepped away from it because it's become... For a while, it was very busy, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's what I was about to say, yeah.
Presumably, it'll come around again.
Everything will. Always comes around.
Like anal.
Yeah. And our popularity.
we'll never come around again.
We mentioned a couple on previous reviews that Drugs and Wires, the webcomic...
Yeah,
that's a fantastic sort of cyberpunk, very fresh spin on it.
Yeah,
the web address, I can't remember that name now, but I'll stick it in the show.
It's like
the London-based artist. She was in Orbital doing the live drawing last time I was there.
Oh, okay.
I remember her name. She's on Cryo Claire on Twitter. I can't remember the name of the.
Yeah.
Yeah, the that's great comic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't narrow it down.
But I think you've just pointed out like a good example of like cyberpunk there, and also Tokyo Ghost is another one. I think when it was really big, it's like all these genres, they have a boom, but because there's so many ones that just aren't worth the price of admission, it sort of waters it down and everyone gets fed up of it a bit easier, don't they? They're just sort of like, I'm tired of it.
Well, it's like zombie comics. Every person trying to do a zombie comic and definitely hit market saturation a long time ago on that, in my opinion.
TNA comics went through their time, didn't they, and vampire comics, and what's the one we saw, bestiality comics that had its moment, didn't it?
Shall we do a bestiality vampire zombie cyberpunk comic?
Yeah.
If you're going to say weekend, I'm on board with you. If you're going to say comic,
let's start brainstorming.
That's going on.
You bring up an event organizer in Prague and say, "Look, these are the things we want to do the weekend." No problem.
It's all right. Brainstorm.
Brown Stormy.
Oh, dear God.
Dodgy prawn sandwich.
Oh, there's a band name for you. Anyway. Right, so Tokyo Ghost.
Back on track.
Yeah, that's one I definitely need to check out.
I feel at home again.
I would, definitely. If you like the sci-fi, bit grungy, and there's kind of social commentary in there as well, so it's it ticks a lot of boxes for me. But
Sean Murphy is one of those artists who does like sort of social commentary with his as well as beautiful artwork. Do you think he'll ever talk to us? No, he won't.
No.
You mentioned one a couple of weeks ago, didn't you, Tony? Was it Sparks?
Oh, that was like Sub-Punk.
Yeah,
that was very well done. Yeah, I really like that.
As a sort of a fresh spin on it.
It was very much so, yeah.
Are we saying that the resurgence is coming?
Yeah, it's on its way. We're ahead of the curve. Mm.
You're thinking about concept, cyberpunk. Got to be in there.
Cyberpunk scat. That's on its way.
Yeah. Cyber scat.
He's allowed to say it's his birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, this show, Dan Butcher can say whatever he wants.
Yeah. And I bought him a comic with lots of dongs in it.
Yeah. He didn't have to.
Birthday. No. I threw them in there. Just went in there.
Just lots of Polaroids fell out when he opened the book.
You would have thought that would detract from a trade paperback of The Amazing Spider-Man. Not so. Very great.
When Stacey had no idea.
Yeah.
My Polaroided dong flying across the book.
Oh, anyway. From this horrible subject to one that's a lot better. And let's put the attention back on Matt and ask him about his new book with Bounce Comics. Bubbles 07, which is a fantastic... Hey. It's a fantastic title that Dan Butcher didn't get until recently.
I fucking love puns, so I don't know why I didn't get that. I mean, it's just so well done. I just didn't feel under the radar.
Exactly. But for those out there who don't know about it, Bubbles 07, Matt Rook, pitch it to us.
Okay. Bubbles 07 is a bonobo, but he's also an MI7 agent, and he's tasked with foiling the dastardly plans of a bunch of evil animal geniuses. But these evil animal geniuses were once Bubbles' companions at the research centre.
This, have you got this written down? Because that is very good.
Yeah, I did. I did write that down. Yeah, I must admit, I wrote that down.
And I do like the way in panel two you're in it as well.
Yes.
It's that's the first time I've ever done that. So that's probably the last time I'll do that as well.
First time you've done it clothed.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Yes. I mean, I'm using reference shots all the time for Bubbles of me, so
Right. Okay.
What? You're like a 3 foot tall monkey.
Have you got a little hairy hand that has to press the lift button?
For those out there,
oh dear.
You've probably picked this up by now. It's like a James Bond. It's like the James Bond in the classic sort of style. But with primates and crazy concepts, how did Bubbles 07 come to be? How did it all begin?
Like most of the ideas we have over a few pints, really. The initial idea for Bubbles was basically... Well, the initial pitch, it's slightly different to what it is now, but it was initially, what if Richard Harris had played James Bond, except he was a chimp?
Right.
Nice.
Was he lined up to play it at some point then, was he? Or?
I don't think so. We were just having all these conversations and thought,
hang
on.
I wish he had.
He would have been great.
Yeah.
Unconventional, perhaps, but...
Yeah.
Especially with the pipe as well, so,
Yeah, I'll get you.
Pipe and a pullover or something. But yeah, it's primarily it's a bit of fun. It's lighthearted, but it was kind of meant to be like the complete opposite to what Apes and Capes is. Mm. So Apes and Capes is quite sciencey and sci-fi and a bit difficult to get into. I think, probably. It's not so easy to explain, but this is something that pretty much anyone could get into, really, I think. Now, especially if they like spy thriller type stuff with a bit of fun.
Now it's a way to do something different from Apes and Capes. Mm-hmm. But it's also got an ape in it. So
yes.
Was that always the sort of plan, you know, when you for your next book after Apes and Capes to be another primate style book, or was that just one of those things that just happened to, it was too good to turn down?
I think it was probably just something that we, I don't know. I know probably most of what we talk about, Gronja and I, probably most of what we talk about, it's usually apes come up at some point. So yeah, it's a theme, I think. Yeah.
So let's get the credits here right. So it's written by, I never know how to say her name.
Gronja.
Who's your partner, isn't she?
My partner, yes.
Yeah, and you've done the art. Did you both co-write it? Because I think it's credited only as her at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, she wrote it. And, I'm just kind of in the background listening to things and commenting on things. Did a little bit of editing on it, but
No,
it's mostly her, yeah.
So okay,
did you concept it together and come up with the basic story plot, and then she actually made the words all pretty?
Yeah, did we do that? Not really. We came up with the idea of the characters and the setting. So the basic story, the world, but not necessarily the plot, and not necessarily the plot of the first story or however many stories we go on for. No, not really. So thank you. No.
How was that working with your good lady? Did that work out all right?
It works really well, actually.
Oh, okay.
Is she there?
No, it's good because we talk a lot about this stuff and it's easy to communicate, because I think that's one of the things when you're working with a writer.
Yeah,
the communication is the key, and we live together, so it's easy to do it. And she can write stuff, and I kind of just see it straight away, and she goes, "Yeah, that's exactly what that's exactly what I envisaged."
Yeah.
Does she sort of go, do it now while you're sitting there watching television, get in the room and draw it? Does she say things like that? Or
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I do get the occasional, "Why aren't you drawing that?" Or "When are you going to draw the next Apes and Capes?" Or that's what, you know.
Sorry, Tony, I distracted you. What are the rest of the credits?
No, mate, I was just going to run through the other people involved. So, letterings by Michael Stock. Layout assistant Lee Killeen, and colour assistant some bloke called Scrivens. I've never
heard. Yeah. Yeah. Good little team. Stocky's lettering is brilliant. Really nice guy as well.
Yeah.
Easy to work with. He did design the logo as well, so that's all good.
The whole presentation of the book is like top notch as well.
I very much like, from a lettering point of view, I like the way a lot of the sort of commentary is done in almost like a typewriter set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To give it that sort of old school James Bond, you know, done on a typewriter type feel. You know, really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So we didn't go as far as kind of the ripped paper edge or anything like that. But
But that's what is this set? What is the year of this? I would put it about 68, 69.
It's got to be modern. It's got the shard in it.
Oh, of course it has.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's not reset in any particular time. I mean, it's current, but there's so much. There's so many throwbacks there.
It's sort of like Secret Service or Kingsman, isn't it? It's got like a, you know, it's a modern setting, but the whole vibe of it is very much. Its influences.
You don't shy away from giving him a pipe and a three-piece suit.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are holding notebooks and not iPads. And when she gives him, like, he's reading the information on the plane, isn't he? Which is a very old-school sort of plane-looking thing. He's got it in, like, a brown paper folder with all the details in it. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But then issue two is going to be a bit more technology.
Right.
We kind of see the Q branch, or we're not calling it Q branch, but, you know, the technology side of things. There's a bit more of that coming in. But yeah, the overall, I think, if you've seen Archer, the animation TV show,
yeah,
it's like that in the sense that it's kind of, it looks like it's old 1960s and 70s, but actually it's not. It's current time.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So you've given yourself the benefit of throwing these little things in, you know, even down to Moneypenny's haircut. You know, it's almost a little bit retro, yes, and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. But you're allowed to use mobile phones still, and, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
I think as soon as you start putting dates on stuff, it literally does date it. I kind of always try not to put stuff on, like in the near future or the past and the present.
You've only got to look at 2000 AD for that problem, haven't you?
Yeah, it's like the far future, 1985.
Yeah. Apparently we're in the middle of Rollerball now, aren't we? I don't know, something like that.
Next year will be the year of the Running Man.
Yeah.
Cool.
So much to look forward to.
Do you know what? We're almost there.
We are almost there. Oh dear. But there is a lot of action in this first issue as well. You pack a lot into the first issue, as well as bubble pipes. But one of my favourite, you will always be in my heart because you've got a giant robotic great white shark.
Yeah, that's great.
Which looks amazing. That panel when it bursts out of the water is amazing. It's made even more amazing when you see that it's being piloted by two penguins. And the style of this book is such that you just look like, well, that makes sense.
Well, I'm glad you think that. That's good. That's a good thing.
It was a good laugh. It was a nicely timed bit of humour, I think, on the page.
Excellent.
Yes.
That, I'm sure she won't mind, but that page, that page came very late in the script. That page 9, it's not page 9, it's page 11, I guess, probably, thinking about the book. It came very late in the script, and in fact, it wasn't really ever in the script. There was a page in the script, and it just had one line on it that said, "Crazy abduction sequence," and that was it.
Right.
And for a long time, it was literally just kind of, we didn't have an idea of what it was going to be. And we did, well, eventually we thought it might be a montage, a kind of action sequence montage, like, like most of the James Bond movies, really, a montage of action sequences put together.
Yeah.
That make, you know, they look great, but they don't make much sense. But eventually we kind of thought it wasn't going to work.
Mm.
So we rewrote it and brought that page in, and I'm actually really happy with that page. There's humour in it, there's kind of a twist in it, and penguins. Yeah, penguins.
There's a couple of jokes. One of them actually makes you question the sort of the way you look at life. That's the best way to say it, because just before well, certainly how this person sees the world, because Bubbles is just about to go into the sea to do a bit of surfing, and he undresses in front of a human female, and then there's a panel of her clearly checking out his arse.
Yeah.
Is that based on a true story?
I really like that kind of, like, when you're jumping pages and you're jumping locations around the world, just like a kind of like a Bond film.
Bond. I was thinking that. I said earlier, I watched Spectre at the weekend, and one bit is in a snowy bit, and you think, oh, this is cool, and he's in a snowy bit, and next thing you know, he's in Rio or somewhere.
Yeah,
I love that about the Bond films. They always had the budget to do it, didn't they? And you never used to see it in other movies. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we wanted to do. You know, one of the kind of ideas we had was almost to have a location almost every other page. Right. Which is kind of almost, we do sort of, and they're quite big jump cuts and stuff, but that works, you know. I think Bond is like that, so I think if you put it in the right context, it works well.
Next thing you know, he's in a motorboat going down the Amazon or something, isn't he? You know, and he's driving through Paris in a car. Yeah, there's all different ones every 5 minutes, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
I mean, obviously, you got the classic bit of Live and Let Die when he's sort of suspended above the pool of sharks.
Yes.
And Dr. Rowe. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not sharks, are they? They're penguins.
They're penguins.
Yeah, penguins again, yes.
And one of my favourite things is his best friend Leroy. He's a lemur, isn't he?
He's
just quite touching.
Yeah. Yes.
I've got to take my hat off. There's a shot you've done of the Shard from the exterior.
Yeah.
And over London. It's really good. It's really good.
Thank you.
How would you kind of, like, artistic process? How would you go about approaching a panel like that?
It's mostly just photo reference, really.
Do you work digitally?
Is it? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's nice, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's probably a mixture of tracing some elements and then photo referencing some stuff. You know, you don't want to make it look like a photograph.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the thing, is it fits in with the rest of it, and you're not afraid of a background in this. You know, you've got tropical islands, you've got underwater, under sort of like ground bases, you've got like Africa. Are there any panels? So when it's in the script and it does sort of say, you know, the shard, do you ever think, oh God, how am I going to do that?
I mean, is there a case here, Matt, where you're on your way back from Lidl? And you and your missus, you've had a little bit of a row in the car over what kind of tea bags to buy. And on the back, you get back and she hands you the script, and it's got written in it, a view of the shard and the whole of London.
Yeah.
Is it just a way of getting back at you?
Yeah. No, actually, I think I probably add a lot of that stuff myself.
Right, okay.
So that's the rod from my own back, really. Yeah.
Mate, I have to say, I think this is your best work so far, genuinely. I think it's really nice.
Well, that's very kind to say
the
that.
Colour works so well on it. Mm. Yeah, it really
Thank
does.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So this is just finished kickstarting, is that correct? What's the backstory? This is for sale now.
It's just gone to print. It's going to print next week.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we literally wrapped it up last week, and it's going to print next week. You can buy the digital versions that are for sale. You can pre-order the print version, and then we'll be bringing it to a few conventions this year, I think.
Are you doing a release at any particular conventions, or
no? Are we? I think we're going to the Bristol Expo, which is coming up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, nice. We're going to go to that.
Yeah, in a few weeks. So hopefully we'll have the copies for that.
So that be a sort of champagne? Would that be like a champagne reception?
Yeah, a guest list only. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're not on it, are we?
it'll be black tie only and cocktails. That's what it'll be.
Yeah. No, we don't do anything like that.
So and by the end of the night, everyone's throwing their own shit.
Yeah. Because you've got some fantastic prints in the back, like the Dean Beattie one. I don't know who did the art on the other one, Dr. Rowe. It's like the homage to Dr. No.
A chap called Kieran Squires, who is somebody we've met through doing Brett Aaron's Torso Bear.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Did some work on that on the last couple of volumes of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Dean's because not only he's got the right, because if you travel about in London, some people don't.
Yeah.
The tube lines have got different coloured handles depending what line you're on. And even though it's the district line, which occasionally is green, they do swap and change the trains with circle lines, thus making it yellow. There you go.
You are such research, a nerd. That's not research, that's being a nerd.
And the orangutan is reading a book called 50 Shades of Orange.
Yeah, it's a brilliant pin-up. He did a great job on that. Yeah, it's great to see characters that you've designed drawn by somebody else.
Definitely.
Different take on it. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So you've got great sort of back matter as well for the book, you know, as well as the story. You've got like, you know, for your eyes only sort of classified bonus material, which I love. You know, I mean, lots of behind the scenes sketches and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, like it says that Bubbles had been in your head for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, has this always, was he always going to be a spy, or did you just want a monkey with a bubble pipe? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
No, he was always going to be a spy, I think, yeah. I think we had the idea originally, was it last year, maybe even the year before?
Yeah.
But last year I did some prints. I don't know whether you saw it, but I had some prints available of Bubbles in a spacesuit on what looks like a planet.
Yeah.
And it was basically a Planet of the Apes homage. So you've got a little crashed spaceship in the background and Bubbles in a spacesuit walking towards the camera. And so that was kind of where it started. And then, you know, these things evolve as you go through it. And the there will be there'll be spacesuits in the next one.
So, oh, really? Yeah, because this, I'm guessing...
You're going on Moonraker.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Baboon Taker.
Baboon Taker. is that Andy Clift who's done the picture in the back of the...
Yes. Yes.
I thought so.
Well, Andy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he just doing sort of cover duties, or are you handling artwork for the second issue?
No. No. We've got... The intention was always for me to do at least one, and then I could... I go off and do something else. But we got Lee Killeen, who did layouts on this one, on Bub, on Doctor O. He's coming in to do artwork on the next one.
Oh, right.
He's quite consistent with your style, I'd say. There's certain similarities I can see between yours and his. So that's it's not going to be too jarring a change, is it? I don't think.
Hopefully not. He's a great little guy. He's an up and coming artist. Met him initially through Dead Universe Comics.
Oh yeah, we were talking about them earlier. Funny enough,
he was the I don't know if you saw it. He was the artist on Kaiju Steel.
Right, I don't think I've read that. No.
And that came out a couple of years ago.
Is that your local comic shop? Is it Dead Universe? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was. We moved out of Aylesbury now, but yeah, it was. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Lee's doing the next one. And the idea is to get a different artist, I think, for pretty much all the other ones, except for maybe the last one. I'll do the last one, probably.
Okay.
How many do you have planned?
I think it's 8 or 9.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, 9 in total, yeah.
And
they're all quite short as well. Right. So yeah. Initially what we were going to do was... we weren't going to release them separately. So initially we thought we'd do a big collection, like an anthology, and different artists and possibly even different writers. So that kind of changed. But the idea of them being quite short kind of stuck. So they'll get eventually pulled together in a trade or something, and in its entirety, it'll be quite good. Yeah.
That's what you want with a book you're doing. It'll be quite good.
It'll be quite good, yeah. King of the understated me, yeah.
No, but understatement or no, Bubbles 07 is a cracking comic. That's been,
very good.
Yeah, Thank you.
Very well put together, I think. By the Bounce Comics team. Now, is this the first thing that Bounce Comics have put out as that under that moniker?
Sort of. It's probably the first title that's been out from issue one, because Andy's got Bertie Bear.
Was the last issue under Bounce for that? I didn't realise that, dude. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Right.
And also the last couple of Apes and Capes issues were under Bounce, I think, as well.
So run us through who's a member of Bounce then. Who's the little crew there then?
Okay, so me and Gronje.
Yep.
Andy Clift, John Scrivens.
We hate Clift.
Yeah.
We don't really.
So John Scrivens and Brett Uren.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's a little group. It's a collaboration group more than anything. Somewhere to kind of pool our resources, really. Not got to the point where we're a limited company or funding, books too much. Yeah, it's just still Kickstarter and stuff like that.
It seems like a lot of people are taking this route nowadays. When you got like the Back to Immortality, the Big Attic Punch
shows, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it seems like a good way of kind of.
It's into promotion, isn't it?
We even hit the point where you're up north, I'm up south. They send each other stock. When we do a con each, you can have respective sales at either one.
Yeah, like Close to Immortality do that sort of thing, don't they? They've very much spread themselves out by doing that, and I think it's quite wise.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, because I think it's a small press. It's the exposure and getting this stuff out there in front of people is a large portion of the battle you're fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
a good thing as well, I think, having a little team together, because you bounce ideas off them, and if you're not sure about something or how to... who to speak to in a comic book shop, for instance, if you want to get your books in there or something like that, or occasionally we'll take stuff down to Orbital speak to Camilla there and get stuff in there.
Are you still selling stuff through Dead Universe? Because I know you moved away, but...
No, not currently, actually. No, right. Not at the moment. Okay. Might have to go and speak to Ian about that, though, but yeah. Not currently, no.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it's as an artist, it's good to have a kind of trusted circle where you can kind of share artwork and you know you're going to get a valid opinion back on, you say, what do you think of this? And you know the person answering the question isn't afraid of saying it doesn't work or it does.
Or even a bit of encouragement sometimes. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's all that's needed.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's all great, kind of like I've seen people post up work in forums, and all they really want is a pat on the back. Whereas sometimes people will post stuff up, and they're like, "I need serious feedback on this. Like, can you read that?" And then
saying, "I was thinking exactly what you're saying there today, because I know I sent you and Dan and Vince. I sent a review through, didn't I, before it got posted?
Yeah,
yeah.
And it got posted yesterday, and I got quite a lot of quite good feedback from the creator." Who said, look, this is what I was looking for. I was looking for a book that makes people think. And he sort of took the very small little criticism around it on the chin sort of thing and said it was his favourite review. And I thought, oh, okay.
Mm.
There's something to be said for constructive criticism.
Yes. Totally.
Yeah. It was a really well-measured response and very articulate and very kind of thoughtful and understanding of the material in question.
Thanks, so
it goes to show the creator of it as you've taken on board, thought about it and understood it. And
yeah.
I sent
a script out to a friend of mine, a creator we talked about on the show, actually, and he sent me a response this week. And it was so articulate in the way he wrote it, like you say, and it so helped me thinking through the process of where I needed to go with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and he took in some real time on it, and I thought, this is brilliant. Yeah, I think you need it. I think when you sit there and you type or you draw in your room on your own, mm-hmm. you need someone to bounce it off, don't you? Which I suppose is why Twitter and Facebook have become so popular for the comics crowd, really.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's a bit of a kind of not galling, but if you kind of writing something or doing a script and then someone asks you one question and it kind of unravels it, it's like, okay, I'm glad someone asked that question.
Yeah.
It's like, why doesn't Mr. X just do that? And you're like, oh, yeah, he could kind of, that kind of fucks it. So rework that.
I never especially want anyone to ask me that.
Especially if you're the sort of guy who rewrites stuff. I think in the rewriting of stuff, sometimes you lose things, don't you?
Yeah.
You lose where you automatically knew that something should have linked to another, but in the rewrite you've lost that. And I think you've got to have someone else's eyes on it, or you've got to put it down and walk away and come back to it a week later and look at it again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I suppose you're right, aren't you, Matt? Because your partner can do that for you, can she not? Or
absolutely. Anybody, you know, if you can bounce it off anyone, really. And likewise with the screen, with the script, I can read it and then tell her if it's any good or not.
I have to say her script is brilliant.
She'll be pleased with that. Good.
It's very brilliantly written. It's pitch perfect for what it is and telling a great story as well.
She's got all the transitions between panels down spot on as well, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the movement between panels is really good. This particular bit I really liked is him sitting in there when he walks in, puts his hat down. You know, you can see everything in that room, even though you only get a limited view, don't you? Yeah. So really well written. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Very good.
I mean, Bubbles is Bubbles all the way through. You know, it's like the character talking. It's not kind of the script being written. It feels very genuine and like it's a really well fleshed out character. And
I like the way he doesn't walk down the steps from the plane as well. He slides down the side.
Don't we all do that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, kiss the ground.
Little quirks are good. I like that.
Must be handy, obviously, being with your partner and having the script right there, because occasionally I get sent a script and I read it through and I go, yeah, that makes total sense. And then when I start working on it and I'm sort of like a couple of pages in, I'm like, hold on, what does that mean? I've no fucking clue. I didn't really think about that too much.
Yes. But
when you actually get into the kind of the nitty gritty of drawing it, it doesn't sometimes make sense and you have to bounce it off the writer.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's it. That's the whole bit that I was saying before about communication.
Mm.
It works really well here because, you know, I can just talk to her.
Turn around.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that mean?
Yeah.
You've all sort of worked together before, haven't you, down the line from like writer to letterer to colorist and stuff. You've all had some sort of communication.
Mm.
You know, you're not pulling in someone brand new that you have to explain everything. Is that correct?
That's true, yes. Yeah, so
there's already a shorthand and there's a trust there, isn't there?
Well, we've never This is the first time we've worked with Mike Stock, actually.
Right. Oh, you can't trust him.
I mean, we know him quite well, but yeah, it's the first time we've worked with him properly. And you know, he's good. It's good. If, as long as you, I think the letterer, because previously I was doing lettering myself, and you know, seems like a good idea, but no, maybe not so much. But it's good when you can, you know, you've got your layouts or maybe your pencils, and send it over to Mike, and then he can put the lettering on it. But before you've even done the ink work, you can see whether it's going to work or not.
Yeah.
So that's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the other thing I was wondering, Matt? I don't know if you want me to ask you this, but I find your work sort of, it's got a sort of classical style to it. It's not, I'm going to say you're not influenced by a 90s artist and stuff like that. Would I be right? Or where are your influences? Where do they sort of lie?
That's a good point.
This is an amazing bit of acting, because about a minute ago I told him I was going to ask this. So he's like, this is, this is an interesting question now that you bring it up. Yeah.
I would, 90s artists, maybe. No, I mean, I grew up reading a lot of that stuff, and there probably was influences early on. But I would say probably people like Ian Carbard and Darwin Cook, the late great Darwin Cook.
Type simpler, like less is more.
I have a thing about, I mean, I'm not there myself, but I have a thing about economy of line, as I like to put it. Somebody who can just make a mark, and you know, it means a thousand things, but you know exactly what it is.
Definitely
Darwin Cook's like top of the list of when it comes to artists for me.
You said you were a 2000 AD reader growing up as well.
Oh, blimey.
There's been so much talk about 2000 AD.
There was a lot. I don't know. I mean, there was a lot that I liked. Growing up, I mean, that was, you know, this was 20-something years ago, so it's a bit difficult to say that it influences me now, but certainly Simon Bisley and Colin McNeil. I mean, I used to love Colin McNeil's work.
Right, okay.
His painted stuff was fantastic. Gibbons, obviously, Dave Gibbons, can't fault him. Fantastic. Even now, still fantastic. There's loads, really. Oh, Dave McKean was a big favourite of mine.
Okay.
He wasn't so much 2000 AD, but and certainly not really an influence on you know, how I make my artwork, but
I think you'd never get a comic, mate, would you?
No. No, but I think in terms of it's difficult to put my finger on it, but the sort of, you know, the kind of stuff he was doing made me want to go out and do stuff to make art, you know.
Right, yeah. Because he was stretching it. Do you mean he was stretching the style?
Yeah, probably.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The originality, I suppose, of a lot of his stuff. You know, a lot of his stuff we hadn't really seen that sort of thing before. I mean, still to this day,
yeah,
we haven't really seen a lot of the stuff he tries. You know, because he's sort of very much a multimedia thing, isn't he?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm a big admirer of his stuff. I think it's beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
So how long have you been working in digital? Sorry, Tim.
Since Apes and Capes, really. So the last four or five years, I guess. I mean, that's really all I've been working in comics for as well, to be honest.
Right. What made you start there, dude? What's, you know, because what made you sort of think, oh, I'm going to do my own one?
Yeah. I just want to get back into drawing, basically.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was something I did, I started studying fine art and stuff like that, and then going to college. I initially wanted to get into illustration at university, but didn't manage to get a place, so I ended up going with graphic design instead and trained as a graphic designer. So then spent the last 20 years working in design and video production, and kind of forgot about the drawing. So I just wanted to get back into it, really. That's what, you know, and Gronje wanted to write again, so it was a case of let's put these things together and do something, you know.
And the question has to be asked, what is it about you and monkeys?
Okay, there's a genuine proper link there.
Especially right, okay, with, interesting, let's hear
it. Oh, let's hear it, yeah.
Yeah,
with, yeah, it's not that, no. With Apes and, especially with Apes and Capes, it, Gronje works for an orangutan charity conservation charity.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, primates, I mean, yeah, we're fans of lots of animals and stuff, but yeah, primates are quite high up there in the animals we like, and so the, yeah, there's so yeah, the link, the charity link is there.
And I gotta say, you draw primates and monkeys very, very well. I think it can't be understated that drawing animals is no easy feat. I think to get them actually, because some people could draw a cartoon of a monkey, but can it actually look like a monkey?
Yeah.
Do you find them fun to draw?
I do find them fun to draw. I find them. Yeah, I don't find them too difficult.
Show off.
I find drawing humans a lot more difficult because I think with things, animals and apes and things that aren't us, you can get away with a lot. You don't have to. They don't have to be absolutely perfect. But when you're drawing people, even if you're simplest of lines or whatever, the proportions need to be right, the positions need to be right, all that kind of stuff, because you instantly will tell if it's wrong. So drawing apes, yeah, you can get away with a lot more, basically.
Interesting, yeah.
But I do enjoy drawing them as well, yeah.
What would be your ideal? Would it be a Planet of the Apes book? Would you love to do that, do you think? Or
Oh yeah, I'd love to do that, yeah.
I think your style would be really good for that as well.
Especially the newer iteration of Planet of the Apes. Yeah, that would definitely suit you, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I did. Dan McDade's work on that I really liked, actually.
Yeah.
That, those recent books. Yeah.
Yeah, they were telling the story different between the two movies, weren't they? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
There nice. You go. So, monkeys. But where? So, at the moment, where can you get Bubbles 07? Because, like you say, it's been in print now, but you can get it digitally. So, where can people get hold of it?
People can get hold of it at bouncecomics.co.uk. There should be a link on there for buying the digital copy, or buying both, actually. You can pre-order physical copy.
Nice.
Once it's in print, we'll probably take it to a few shops and stuff. Like I say, Orbital, most certainly. Not sure about the other ones just yet.
You've got some events coming up. You're doing Bristol, I believe you said that.
Doing Bristol, yes.
What other shows have you got coming up later this year?
Not too many at the moment, actually. At the moment, certainly Thought Bubble. And trying to get tables for Nice as well at the moment, because that's quite local for us, so that would be a good one to do.
Yeah,
but we've been a bit quiet on the convention front this year. So really, the only one that's completely firmed up is Thought Bubble.
I think Nice is back at the Corn Exchange, isn't it? I know it's because it was at a rugby club last year.
Yes,
I think they've moved back to the Corn Exchange, which I think will give them more room for tables this year. It's a better venue, isn't it?
We didn't go last year, but we did do the first 2 years, and they were good. We quite enjoyed them. Yeah.
Yeah, so last year was too small. I think it was a last minute attempt. Yeah. It was like a marquee. And it was a bit expensive to get into a small venue that was nearly all people signing books you had to buy. You know, it was a bit of one of those sort of things. But I think the first couple of years they had it more sorted, definitely.
Yeah.
Nice. I didn't mean to make that pun. Nice. I actually genuinely just said nice.
And they need to think about the name, because it's Nice. Yeah. It's Northampton International Comics Expo that's held in Bedford. But there you go.
The first one was in Northampton.
They should just call it Nice, just without the sort of like punctuation. It should just be like Nice, the word Nice.
Yeah.
Just own
Nice
it.
Comic-Con. Own they it. Get all sorts of fuckers there. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So if you go to any of these cons, look out for Matt. He's going to be at Bristol. We're going to be at Bristol. We're excited about that. So we'll hassle you there, Matt. Don't worry about that.
Brilliant. Thank you.
But speaking of events, Tony, what other events do we have, my friend?
Yeah, we got a few. at the Cartoon Museum until the 24th. So if you rush, you'll get there and see it, which is an exhibition called The Great British Graphic Novel. I'm not a big fan of that phrase, to be fair, graphic novel, because it's all comics to me, but there's some great original artwork for show. You've got David Lloyd, Dave Gibbons, Joe Calhoun, Brian Talbot. Just it's the history of British comic creators, really. All in quite a small little venue, but it's really worth visiting. They have some quite good exhibitions up there. It's 35 Little Russell Street, London, WC1A2HH. It's just behind, if anyone knows where Gosh used to be, it's kind of in one of the roads behind there, near the British Museum, and it's www.cartoonmuseum.org. Very worthwhile. I went and saw it. It's really, really nice. As we said, the aforementioned Bristol Comic Expo is the 6th of August, between 10 and 5pm. It's at the Double Tree by Hilton, which is where the old Bristol used to be on the occasion. Redcliffe Way, Bristol. At it will be Hellbound Media, Dave Brown, our previous guest, Pete Rogers, Lou Stringer, Paul Grist, Lee Garbett, Rob Williams, who's doing some great stuff at the moment, and John M. Burns. On the 17th of August, between 6pm and 9pm, Brendan McCarthy, the absolutely brilliant British artist who we don't see enough of, who did Strange Days, he did some Dread, he did Spider-Man Fever. Did anyone read that?
No, I didn't see that one.
It's probably the wackiest Spider-Man you'll ever likely to see. He did Skin years ago, Shade the Changing Man he did some work on, and he's also the designer on movies like the recent Mad Max movie, which he had quite a big input into early on. Cool. And he'll be doing he'll be doing a talk, and he'll be signing copies of his new trade, Dream Gang, which he comes from the Dark Horse Presents anthology series, is collected in a trade. At 6 to 7 he'll be doing a signing, and then 7:30 to 9pm he'll be doing a talk, which I'm sure the guys at Gosh will record for their podcast, which is always worth listening to. Then the 27th of August to the 28th, between 10am and 5pm, is the Mighty Melksham Comic Con. Melksham Assembly Hall, which we all met together for the first time last year. It's quite a touching moment if we do it again.
Literally.
Yes. small press-wise, Marcosia, Big Punch, The Mighty Dogs with Descending Outlands. Is he the new issue out of that, do you know, mate? Or
he will be launching it at Melksham, hopefully.
Oh, brilliant. I look forward to that.
Yeah.
The Mighty Red Mask, Jenny Gilblad, who probably won't have an incident in the toilet, and if she does, she won't tell me about it. Reckless Hero, Tom Ward, Sam Webster, and Attic Studios. After my comment last week where I said the guest list is a bit like last year, it's a bit like last year, to be fair. I checked it out again with the added guests of Ian Churchill and Gary Erskine, who I don't think were there. Either of them were there last year.
I know Verity Glass is there this year, and she's an amazing artist. So
Emma Vicelli, Sonia Leong, is it?
Yeah.
Emma Vicelli, who we invited on the podcast and turned us down very politely last year, gave me back the business card I gave to her. But there you go. These things happen, don't they? I can be a little bit creepy in real life.
You should always be clothed when you give out business cards, Tony. Yeah.
Take this business card, move your hand up and down. There you go. That's it for there's a load more coming up, but it's a little bit of a quiet about a month of just a couple. There's the usual crap that I completely ignored, but yeah, so that's it for the events at the moment, dude. There
well
go.
August is going to be a busy I've got two conventions in a month for me, so that's it's probably I got Bristol and then Melksham, so it's a busy month for me. All guns blazing, as it were. I'm going to be knackered by the end of it. Anyway, so they're the events. Another thing you should check out is the Small Press Factor 2016.
Hey.
I feel like this probably needs its own theme tune. Probably, but not this week.
I'm going to be holding Amanda Holden's hand.
You're going to be holding Amanda Holden's hand? That's a mouthful. Holden. The guys from Leamington Comic Con, they've started something which is brilliant, I think, and a lot of Indian small press people have retweeted it and put the word out for it. The Small Press Factor 2016. Now, it's a little sort of competition where you put yourself forward, you fill out a survey, you do a little video about your comic book. It's going to be great to get the word out about your book and your work, and also there's some great sort of prizes, isn't there?
There are. Well, there's some great ones and a not so great one.
Yeah. Well, right. So the prizes for this, and this is why you should take part, Right, you can. There's a chance to win a table at the 2017 Leamington Comic Con, which is a fantastic event.
Yeah, it's a good event. We went last year, didn't we? Yeah.
It's going to come back stronger than ever, and it's going to be great. And there's going to be lots of free publicity for your publication. The winner will actually be promoted by Leamington Comic Con. They're going to be profiled on Down the Tubes and Pipe Dream Comics. And as a booby prize, you're going to be invited to take part in an episode of the Awesome Comics Podcast.
Yeah.
Which is self-harm.
There's the two options here.
Yeah. I don't think there's a receipt for that one. I think you have to do it. But seriously, take part in this. I'll put a link in the show notes, but Leamington Comic Con on Facebook, they've got plenty of links for it. You can find them at Leam Comic Con on Twitter. Easy to take part, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully there's some people out there who want their book to be talked about.
I think they'll give you a lot of promotion. It should hopefully get a few eyeballs on your book and get a few shifted. Yeah. I would think as well.
Yeah.
as well as get you that little winner of thing on the front of your book. It's very good. Yeah, and he's a good guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
What have you got to lose?
Yeah. He's very much a supporter of the small press scene. And I mean, from a personal perspective, I would quite like it if what comes about from this is lots of new sort of independent comic book creators who, new to the game, and they don't quite know how to get their book out there. I'd like to see a fresh face come along and make us all look bad. No, that's not what I mean.
And I'll come and stay over your house.
Yeah, that's not one of the prizes. We have to put a warning on the show for that, haven't we? Right. So the Small Press Factor 2016. Look for it in the show notes, folks. So,
do you want to do the competition?
Oh yes. Speaking of competitions, you wait till you hear about this, folks. This will blow your tiny minds.
It's a little bit dark and slightly sexy secret of ours for a while now.
We have secrets on this show, and they're the best kind of secrets. The sort of secrets that could probably like expose Batman or like Super Ted's magic word. It's that kind of sexiness. So Tony, what is it? Take it away.
Right, okay, here you go. This is a competition, right? Our new competition. We haven't had a competition for a while, have we?
No.
Yeah. We let's set the scene. Sometime, I'm going to say in the last 10 episodes, myself, the Vista and the Deaster, that's Vince and Dan, that's what I call them on Twitter.
Sometimes he just shortens it to VD.
Van Driver. Sometime in the last 10 weeks, we have made a comic up. We've reviewed a comic, each of us, and we've made it up. It doesn't exist at all, the comic we've made up. Yeah? Completely and utterly made up.
Yeah.
Our reasons to do this are particularly, we're going to keep to ourselves, but mostly just because it made us laugh. Because it amused us. And we sort of thought, let's fucking make a comic up. You know? Yeah. And we put them out there. And I'm going to say that nobody so far has called us on it.
No.
Any of them, have they?
It's been a really interesting social experiment.
It has, yeah.
And it also, I'm really proud of the amount of bullshit that we can do and get away with it.
In fact, I knew that Dan's was coming up, and he started talking about it, and I thought he decided not to do it that week.
Yes!
And he was talking about a real comic.
Yes. Yes.
Now, if the prize is, if you can work out which comics we all made up, there's two prizes. Scarlett Johansson will come and sexually interfere with you around your house. That's one of them. Or, you know, not judging you. You want. Yeah. And Dan will kill someone for you. Out of your own choice.
Yeah.
He'll go and kill someone.
Yeah. Fine.
He's good at it. He's got quiet shoes, so no one will know.
Yes.
Yeah. I do it all the time anyway, so doing one more is not an issue.
Or I will alternatively take the piss out of them so much they'll kill themselves. They're the sort of... That's a subtle way of murdering someone. It takes a while sometimes. Either that, or they may be made up. Who knows? I will send you a couple of trades through in the post.
And I will do a sketch for you, and Dan will do a sketch for you. Should we say that?
Brilliant. There you go.
Yeah,
and I'll write you a poem and draw around my private parts.
which one will be longer?
They come up with.
Sorry, mate?
We did kind of like the little backstories on the comics very well, I think.
We did, yeah. There's a little bit of a depth to this as well. Yeah. And I will say, as a little
bluff.
Yeah. It is a little bit. Yeah, very much so. It is a little bit. They are all in the show notes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Don't be thinking, I've got to listen to the show. They are. If you can figure out from the show notes over the last 10 weeks or so, let's say 10 episodes, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. So it is technically 10 weeks. We've not done an extra one, have we?
Yeah.
And it's in there somewhere. And you might be able to work it out through going through the show notes as opposed to going through the... there are, certainly in relation to my one, there's two people who know about it, who are used as a little backstory for it.
Yeah.
So, no, you can't win the prize. I'm sorry to say that, but you can't win the prize. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, anyone who already knows what we're doing cannot win.
And we'll know, because we told you.
Yeah. and those people as well... may have also said on social media how good those books were.
They may have done. Yeah, they might well. There's a good chance of that, haven't they?
Yeah.
There's also a few people who may have favourited or followed things by mistake. Let's put it that way. That yeah. did make, in a couple of cases, made us chuckle.
I think people are going to suss out a couple quite quickly, I think.
You think so?
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But even so, I think all of them... At the end of the day, we came up with three books I wouldn't mind reading.
Yeah, no. Yeah. We all did it independently. We all sort of thought about it, and then had a chuckle, didn't we, after one show?
Yeah.
And then we all went away, and we came out with this like humongous fucking made-up story, each of us. I'm so proud of you guys. The amount of effort went into these things.
So should we do the reveal next week or leave it a couple of weeks?
Yes.
Next week we're going to do it, because we've got a Three Amigos episode.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Next week's going to be an epic week where we lose a lot of listeners.
We don't care.
Yeah. So get involved on the Facebook and the Twitter and everywhere. Just let us know what you think were the fake books.
Yeah. And if you're nice to me, I might give you a little clue. If you're near the mark, I'll give you a little clue if you message me. There you go.
Oh,
that's nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Shout outs, gents. Do we have any this week?
That's it for me. I haven't got one on.
Mine would be just to give a quick shout out to John Cullen. Like, he's a really great Twitter user.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of things he's brought up in the past couple of weeks about people kind of ripping stuff off. One recently was like a fine artist in inverted commas doing kind of like pop art rip-offs.
Oh, this came
like
about...
modern day
comic
covers.
I remember seeing this because Tom Taylor pointed it out, and then John Cullen like just went at these people.
Yeah.
God bless
it. It was bad. That was the worst. And the worst thing is they didn't initially take it down, did they? They did after a while. But he said, look, this is pop art you don't understand, was kind of the answer to that.
It's ridiculous. You know. They dropped the price. So what does that say?
Yeah. I did do quite a lot of reading on Lichtenstein after I read about that. And it does go back far now. But the problem people don't face now is that the internet exists.
Yeah.
You know, people can check on your work.
That's what I say. I could kind of, though I don't really agree with what Lichtenstein did. He can get a pass because of what the time period. Okay, but like when you got the net, it's utterly ridiculous to make such sort of facetious claims of the pop art stuff.
And also, these people are using like major IP characters. They're not like doing like one panel of a building exploding.
Punisher.
They literally like isolated characters out of a comic book and then stuck it on like a one-tone coloured background or something stupid
it's
like that.
He said, I take them and I put them in other environments. I think, on a red background?
Yeah.
I'll put something in another environment.
Yeah. That a lot of his red in the background.
Oh, dear God.
No, but just kind of like, it's frustrating when you see people kind of like, really talented people struggling hard. And then you just get someone fucking parfing artwork in Photoshop and nicking it. And
there was that cartoon I think I sent you two guys, wasn't it? Of you know, the guy who Lichtenstein ripped off and him saying, you know, I haven't got enough money, you know, I'm ill. You know, Lichtenstein's making millions by just basically copying a panel. Well, that's what these guys are doing. The prices of some of these prints as well, for God's sake. Was it $175 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was $175.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It is.
Yeah.
Because I flagged up the gallery where there's involved in conversation. And I was like, I can't see how you can do this and be party to it. And then they blocked me. So, half of the course.
Oh,
that's not
dear.
Being rude. It's not being rude. It's just asking. How would you do this? It's wrong.
It's like, if you go about things in a civilized, sort of grown-up manner and you get shut down, then... You've obviously struck a nerve. There's guilt and shame somewhere.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I know about guilt.
Yeah. And I know about shame. But one place that doesn't know about these things
is
a place to hang your cape.
I like the way Dan's going, come on, yeah. Come on.
Text with Vince.
happy birthday, Dan. That one was for you.
Yeah.
If you like your superheroes not like ripped off and put on a shitty background, and if you like your superhero TV shows and everything in between, then you should go to AP2HYC. It's the place to go. They've also got great articles and reviews and interviews. They show a lot of love to the small press scene. So, and they're a great bunch of guys. One of them actually cosplayed as the Red Mask once, which sort of blew my tiny mind. Another website that will blow your mind will be pipedreamcomics.co.uk. If you read your books digitally, Matt said that's how he's started reading his, and I certainly read mine because I'm a cheapskate. And with the current climate of politics at the moment, we're not going to say any more than that, but we've heard a lot about actual physical comics going up in price in your local comic book shop, which is probably going to cause a lot of comic book shop owners headaches. Pipe Dream Comics talk about the digital comics. I don't know whether they'll have that issue. Do you think the price hike will stretch to digital?
It will on Comixology because it's the exchange rate, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably will.
Yeah.
So basically, people, you're fucked either way. But if you read your comics digitally, then
shoplifting is the way forward, I think.
Of course, yes. Ram raiding, and I don't talk about getting rams.
Back to Anal again.
Yeah, always. No. Oh, let's brownstorm it. Right, go on. yes.
I still can't believe you said that.
I can't That's believe I said that. Yeah. I've created a hashtag, which is what I hoped my life would achieve. but pipedreamcomics.co.uk, once again, they've got articles, reviews, some great digital books that they talk about. So go there to check that out. And where would we be in this world? What would we be? We'd be nothing. We'd be like living in a box, living in a cardboard box, as the song says, if we did not have Down the Tubes.
Hey, John's been very busy. I'll tell you what. He messaged me at 5:15 this morning.
What was it? Help me. He didn't attach a picture of like where
he was.
Was he
yet to go to bed or just got up?
I don't know, actually. I don't know.
I would recommend people check out that review you read, you wrote, Tony.
Anyone wants to find it, it's about the Wurmgler.
Yeah.
Which is an experimental comic that's come out. It's not a bad comic. It's a well-made thing and interesting. So have a look at it. Yeah, and I've just put one up for Monologue 2 as well, which is it strays. I think the written review and the verbal review that we do on here should be different, and I think you can say and do different things on the different way, you know, the spoken word or the written word. And I think there's quite a few panels from Monologue which I talked about last week, which is exceedingly good, and that went up today, so have a look at that as well.
Awesome. So downthetubes.net is your place to go. Fantastic website. Cool. So what recommendations do we have for our lovely listeners out there? Tony, would you like to start?
Okay, I've got a book which I mentioned briefly when I did the LCAF roundup, which is by Andy Poyaji, and it's called Viripathy. I'm going to read you the blurb from the book, because that's what we do today. Viripathy is the ability to directly experience the feelings of another. The process is made possible by using a veripathic communicator. The transfer of feelings can travel one way or both ways, depending on the device and its context of use. So this is, like we say, a near future book, where there's a device that you can wear on your head, and if you and someone else wear it, you can tell feelings and pains and thoughts and moods and the sort of emotional content of your life, really, through this communicator. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I bet you're glad for that back of the book blurb, aren't you?
Yeah. I was trying to sum it up, and I thought, oh, this is perfect, yeah. And he's a much cleverer guy than me, so he's got it quite right, you know. But what Andy does is, I was chatting to him about it, actually, and he tells 5 or 6 very short stories, and they extrapolate on that idea. So he puts the users of these devices in different situations, if that makes sense. One of them is sort of a medical diagnosis, where the patient, you know, if you've got somebody who's got like a constant pain, you know, you may not realise you've got a constant, I don't know, leg ache or headache or earache or something like that because you've become used to it. But where a doctor or a nurse can put it on their head, they can tell well, you shouldn't have this. You know, this is the, you know, typical of this illness or this. You know, this is what you need doing, which is quite clever. They also use it in marriage guidance, which did make me laugh, where the couple put it on each other. You know, they wear it so they can understand each other's feelings and how they're misunderstanding each other. Did one in a rehabilitation of a sort of social care situation. But what Andy does here very cleverly, I mean, it's beautifully drawn. It's very emotional. It's got real emotional content to it. But what Andy does very cleverly is he allows these ideas, the idea of a world where you can plug in and feel someone else's feelings, as a sort of wider symbol for the lack of empathy in the world today. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So in this sort of near future, the only way we can tell what other people are thinking or what other people are feeling is by plugging bloody helmets on, you know. And in this, it's got that sort of direct line to how we treat social media. You know, oh, he's angry, he's sad, he wants attention, he, you know, this sort of thing. But Andy doesn't hit you over the head with it. With this sort of conceit, he lets it linger through the facts and the story. So the dialogue and the story that happens on the page. Really, really interesting idea. Like, I can't think of something that's the like, you know. Very clever and done. Almost from a very sort of realistic, often sort of domestic setting. You know, the one is just in a flat with a couple talking, and they put their helmets on and they begin to understand each other. He uses it very, very cleverly. I was chatting to him and he said, look, I was thinking about, what do you think about the short sort of nature of all the stories? They're very sort of short. And I said, well, they don't need to be long. You don't need to, you know, make these stories like long, because they're very punchy. They tell the story and they get out very quickly, and each story is very well thought out and an idea in its own. And you don't need a novel's worth. You need these sort of punchy little stories. Very intelligent. I guarantee you will enjoy this. It's a little A, just slightly bigger than A5, full colour comic. You can, if you go to www.ajpoyagi, so I'll spell his name, PoyiAdgi.com, and you can get a copy there. And he self published it. And if you go to at AJ Poyagi on Twitter, you can see some examples of it. It's beautiful stuff. And Andy, as always, is a gent. Whether he puts it out through No Brow, he self-publishes his work, it's always well worth looking at. Very good guy. There you go. That's my one.
Nice. Dan, what birthday boy, what would you like to recommend? Yeah.
I spoke to you briefly off air about the comic I was going to do, and I kind of fucked it up. So I'm going to reserve talking about that till next week, so it'll be a short one. I just came across this TV series by accident. I'll be one of those people talking about TV series. Started on Netflix a couple of days ago, Stranger Things.
Everyone has been talking about this. I haven't watched it yet.
I'm two episodes in. It's really good. It's kind of brings back those old kind of 80s horror films, 70s, 80s horror films. The tone of it is just absolutely spot on. It's like watching an extended kind of sci-fi horror film. I'm only two episodes in, but I feel like the creators of it have kind of taken a look at Brethrenborn and taken a few cues from it. Okay. It's like, it feels like I'm watching Brethrenborn, that like an adaptation of it. But yeah, it's great, really good. I can't say much more than that.
Do you think John Leight will be able to stand up in court and take me to court?
Probably no.
Sorry, John.
I don't know. That said, I'm only two in.
He's very
in,
dodgy, isn't he? I don't think he'll manage that.
Nah. Yeah. He's dodgy in the best kind of way.
Yes. We like dodgy.
Yeah,
I was like kind of at the end of episode 10. I was like, fucking hell, this is quite similar to Brethrenborn. But obviously, I don't know quite as much because I've only two or three episodes in.
It's one of those things that people like a bulk watching, aren't they? Because it's just come out.
Yeah.
We're kind of doing an episode a night. So
nice.
I'm blasting for it. I did watch that iZombie. I wasn't too taken with that, if I'm honest.
Oh, I've not seen that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've just been catching up on Supergirl today. I like that. You know, that's a good series. That is.
Yeah. They changed hands recently, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, went from one channel to another one, didn't it? But it's still going.
It's on the same network as The Flash. And
it will be now, won't it? Yeah, that's right. I can't think of a TV series where they could do Supergirl better. It's so nice, and, you know, it's nice to see.
And you've got a female character in the lead who's very likable, you know, very watchable. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, nice. Cool. Awesome. Plenty of TV to check out there.
Mm.
Yeah.
My recommendation for this week is going to be one of my favourite books on my bookshelf, and it's Deep Sleeper by Phil Hester and Mike Huddleston.
I love his art. Yeah.
This is the duo, Mike Huddleston. He's sort of like a chameleon, isn't he, of art? He can just do all kinds of different things. They're the creative team behind the cult classic The Coffin, which I've spoken about on a past show. Now, I'm going to read the back of the book. I know a few of us done it this episode, but I think, and prepare yourself, this is a big one, but I don't think I, much like Tony, I don't think I could describe it any better, if that makes sense. Right, so here we go. Cole Gibson is haunted by vivid and terrifying nightmares that cripple his career and alienate his family. Soon he learns that his dreams are merely doorways into a hidden level of reality populated by dazzling beings beyond imagining. However, there is a war going on in this new world fought by entities with unfathomable powers. Too late, Cole realizes that he himself is the ultimate prize in this battle and that he must risk his sanity and even his soul to save his family. Now, I've cut out a big chunk in the middle of that blurb, which talks about some of the characters in it. Now, this book is just, it's mind-blowing stuff. It is literally mind. It's about a guy who's having these visions in this dream, in these dreams, and he's very much a family man. And he has out of body experiences, and then when he has one, someone else takes over his body, and how he has to sort of go in these sort of dream realms to try and get his body back because this person that has it is not nice at all. And there's loads of like twisted creatures in it. I mean, there's, for instance, here's a description of some of the creatures. There's the Dervish, which is a planet-killing tornado of violence, clothed in the flesh of his countless victims, naturally. And that actually in the book, that's obviously the big bad. And it rarely is there a villain that has been this terrifying, which is just, and it is when they say a tornado of violence, this thing is just a force of nature, which is just scary. Absolutely scary. There's these warrior sort of jailer monks who they actually allow themselves to be possessed in order to harness the power of the demons that are possessing them. So, and they have like, there's almost a slightly sort of martial art sort of look to them, sort of samurai look to them. There's a shape-shifting personification of lust, and that's not called Esmond. I just want to say that. And there's someone called Calder, who's a wasted husk willing to perpetrate any atrocity to regain his physical form. So there's lots of crazy sort of high-concept things going off. I mean, anytime you deal with like sort of dreamscapes and like realities like that, you just go off-range, can't you, and just do whatever. And sometimes there's a bit much. And there are big ideas going on here, but at the core of the story, it very much is a family story about this guy and his relationship with his family, and it is actually a book that on the last couple of pages, it actually made me cry.
Oh.
Yeah, there's okay. It tugged at my heartstrings so much, and it's so I love Phil Hester's work, and I think there's a lot of character that goes on, very much in his sort of smaller sort of independent stuff as well, things like this and The Wretch. There's so much more going on behind the sort of the art and the big ideas. There's definitely an emotional core to it, which really struck a chord to me. So I remember getting this in individual issues, and and it was a trade that I got, and then you know how you do. You lose it or you give it to a friend and you don't know where the hell it's gone. It was always a book I wanted to get. And I went to Amazon and went onto, like the cheapskate I am, I went to see if I could find a sort of, you know, the sort of cheap secondhand sort of sellers or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
I got the hardcover version, which I never had before, for like £3. So I was absolutely made up.
You're well pleased with that one.
I was absolutely well pleased. It's one of my favourite books, and I've got an amazing IDW level, because it is IDW who have published this, and anyone that knows them, they don't skimp on their presentation. So Deep Sleeper, if you like your concepts quite high and your emotions pulled at... I can't believe I said that.
If you get it cheaper than Vince, he'll come around your house and steal it.
No, do you know what? I'll come around your house and hug you, because it's good that I'm not the only person that's doing this. You can find some absolute bargains on Amazon. Anyway, so Deep Sleeper, definitely look for that one. Matt, what would you like to recommend to listeners before we go?
I would like to recommend a Kickstarter.
Ooh.
I think that went up today for Space Captain issue 3.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Chris Baldy Just looking at it now, he's already gone past his goal, of course.
Scottish award. Didn't he win the Scottish Comics Award recently as well?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Was that at the GCC? Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, it's something that I picked up on Beast Captain 1 a couple of years ago and just fell in love with it. Again, it's that I love that style. It's got that sort of that Tintin-esque kind of artwork. Just works so well, and it's quite small as well. Sort of A5 size, crams a lot into it. Just really, really good quality stuff.
I've heard a lot about Space Captain. It's one I've wanted to check out for a while.
It's a really nice little story too. I mean, it's moving around quite a lot. Just looking at issue 3, he's not in space this time. He's in the jungle, so that's quite interesting.
Outrageous.
So the Kickstarter is live now. What was his goal?
It was only 500.
Oh, quite modest.
So quite modest, yeah.
Taiwan, yeah.
Basically, I think so. Yeah. I spoke to him at Thought Level last year, and he basically said, "Yeah, we go for the funding, the print run, and that's about it, really. Anything above that is a bonus."
Yeah. Does he have a very sensible price for the digital issues? Because I know this is something that
I'm pretty sure he does. £2. £2 gets you version, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's
and you can, in fact, you can get your £4. You can get 1, 2, and 3 in digital version. So even better.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
it's always sort of a bone of contention for us. Some people that for a digital comic, like a single issue, and some people are charging ridiculous money.
Or people who put $2, we'll be your friend.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
I did that last week, and I saw a great Kickstarter, and I emailed it to myself so I'd look at it Monday morning. Yeah. And it's like the lowest one was, I think, sent to you guys like $18 or $20 for a PDF of a comic.
Nah, it's too much.
I was like, fucking hell.
What, just normal length comic?
Yeah.
Was it seriously like normal length? How?
Yeah, it might have been a trade size. It was like 100 pages or something. It was still a lot.
Still a lot, isn't it? Yeah, bloody hell. Yeah. Okay.
One thing that I'm going to rant about Kickstarter a little bit is when you bid on so many, you kind of pledge to so many things, it's just the constant emails from everyone. Yeah. I just kind of like, just fucking deliver it or don't.
Well, I told you, mate, I don't do Kickstarters anymore. I'll put it out there. I mean, firstly, because I get asked to promote so many through down the tubes, you know, and we get quite a few come through to us. So you can't do them all, so you can't play favourites. And the few that I have done in the past, I've just been completely let down over.
Really?
Yeah. You know, just utterly let down. One bloke, I email him once or twice a year to say, oh, nice one, you managed to get over the 3 years now without supplying your book. That always cheers me up.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know there's a couple of horror stories you've got of people who have taken the money and run.
Somebody recently deleted their profile, and because they hadn't sent the books out, they couldn't actually close their profile down. So they just got their name with deleted in brackets next to it. And you got these people writing in saying, well, what's that mean, deleted? Does this mean we're not getting the books? Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I think you find it does. Yeah.
Fucked.
Yeah. That's my crystal ball there, my friend. But yeah, I think that's true.
But one Kickstarter that you can trust is the Space Captain issue 3.
Yes, you can. You can trust Space Captain.
Yeah. Instead of Bring It Back.
Yeah.
It's one of those good ones, folks. You need to check it out.
Yeah, I think you need to think about pricing as well very quickly. I was going through the shelves at Orbital, they've got an awful lot of small press there. Mm-hmm. Some people are overpricing.
Oh, big time.
You know, don't put £6.50 on your little photocopied, you know, zine. You know, it's too much. Think about pricing what other regular comics are. You've got to think about that.
I think they're literally pricing themselves out. Like, that's the reason
they are
picking up great big bundles. I mean, if it costs you £3 to make, I don't know, a zine, you're talking about photocopies, but even if you're breaking even or maybe making a little bit, I don't know, I'm not going to give too much kind of business advice on that, but when you're fucking £6 for like,
I know,
10 sheets of A4 folded in half and stapled.
And you know, people will go, well, it's art, isn't it? You know, you're paying for my time and stuff. Well, you know, everything else doesn't cost that much.
Mm. Yeah.
I've put comics back every week for about the last 3 weeks. I picked it up, read it, thought, I'll review that one, looked at the price, put it back. Yeah, not because I'm tight, just because I think they're taking a piss.
I think exactly the same.
And if we've got to recommend a book to people, I don't want to recommend a book that's like really expensive, because people just, you know, they'll get the hunt with us.
Yeah.
They get the hump of us already because they're buying so much stuff.
They do. Yeah, we get that quite a lot, don't we?
So, people out there, do you have the hump with us? There's several different ways you can let us know how you don't like us anymore, how you don't love us, and why you don't return our calls. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If there's any books or events that we haven't spoken about, but maybe coming up in the future, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Like us on the Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. I think after the competition that we've offered to people this week, we might get a few messages on there. And before I do the final sign off, next week is going to be a Three Amigos show.
Yeah.
And we talk about some great comic book stores on this one. But there's many. I know a lot of people out there, whenever we hear people talk about it, especially with Small Press Comic Day, they like to big up their local comic book shops. So we want to know those comic book stores out there that are supporting Small Press really well. If you think there's a store out there that your local shop that supports the indies and small press creators, let us know and we'll give them a shout out next week.
Yeah,
because we obviously we can only talk about the ones that are necessarily closer to us or like some of the bigger stores. But we know there's like lots of smaller shops out there. You know that those people that it's obviously it's bread and butter. You know that sometimes getting by on their just by the edge of their fingernails, but they're still taking the time to show Small Press some love. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so if that's your store, let us know. And thank you for listening to us. If it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. I sound quite professional. I can't believe it.
You do.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. and thank you for listening to us on iTunes. Leave us a review, please.
Yeah, go on, please.
Please. Dan doesn't need to say please because it's his birthday and he can do whatever the fuck he wants today. And likewise, if you listen to us on Stitcher, thank you very much, or on the Podnose Network, which we're now part of, so thank you very much. Where can people find us on Twitter, Tony?
Yep, on Ezohyz on Twitter. Or go pop over to Down the Tubes, give John some love. He's working very hard for the organising some stuff at the moment, but he's also putting stuff on the site, so go and have a read of it.
Awesome. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com. I love saying Vanguard so much.
I love it.
it's a good comic, that's why it needs to be said.
You got a laugh out of my wife for both of those packages that turned up today.
Oh, really?
Guns McVanguard.
Did I write guns on it?
Yeah.
That's how we treat our friends. See? Yeah. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me @JesterDiablo. And if you want to learn more about my comic, The Red Mask, go to theredmaskfrommars.com. And Matt, where can they find you online?
I'm on Twitter at Articulate Bear, which is ArticulateBear. ArticulateBear.co.uk as well. Or bouncecomics.co.uk.
Brilliant.
Awesome. You're going to want to keep an eye on them because there's going to be plenty more.
Yeah, please do. It's a great issue, mate. Yeah, really liked it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks very much, guys.
As soon as we saw the Kickstarter video, we wanted you on the show, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I did rather embarrassingly doorstep you at a party recently and you just stared at me and I could see the fear in your eyes.
Now I'm going to ask Tony what doorstepping is when we finish the show, but so you won't hear about that. But
nothing
all you people,
rude.
Yeah, right. Thank you for listening, everyone. And from Matt, Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. And as always, stay bloody awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
See ya.